Good morning, good evening, and welcome to the latest and greatest episode of the official Dom J Radio Show. To everybody tuning in, I hope you're feeling well. I hope you are blessed. Thank you for listening to the show. Please be sure to like, share, and subscribe. Do all that cool social media stuff so that we can continue to grow the audience. On this episode, we'll be talking about the stimulus bill that was passed. We're talking in entertainment. We got a lot. We got some Silk Sonic EP. We got Godzilla vs. Hong Kong, Marvel's Falcon and Winter Soldier, the Loki series on Disney Plus. We've got Hove and Jack of Twitter teaming up with Square and Tidal News. We've got the Coming to America review. And this is all on the back of it being International Women's Month. So, you know, we'll be celebrating that as well. We'll have our spoken word selection to boot. All of this and much more after this brief message.
What's good, official Dom J Radio listeners? It's your boy, Agent JJ, a.k.a. Agent Double J. Just to stop by to tell my boy Dom, happy birthday, bro. Hey, another 365 days. Hey, another trip around the sun, bro. Hey, live it up.
Hey, shout out to Agent Double J, Agent JJ, for stopping by the show, showing your boy some birthday love. Yes, definitely celebrated the birthday earlier this week. For those that don't know, Pisces season, you know what I'm saying, right in the thick of it. Shout out to my boy JJ once more, man, for his upcoming nuptials, you know what I'm saying? Definitely looking forward to seeing that union blossom and begin between he and his wife. So, you know what I'm saying? Thanks again, bro, for stopping by the show, showing that love, sending that love right back to you, my guy. 100. This episode, spoken word selection, is brought to you by the official Dom J WordPress page, The Invisible Eye, content created by DR Johnson. Up next on the official Dom J Radio Show. The dentist. The anxiety builds. I am nervous. This is a rare moment in which I feel my heart beat. I had presumed that my mental preparation was complete. Yet I search and find few remnants of confidence within me. It has been a while since I've experienced this fear. Will I ever feel comfortable during my stay? Verily I say unto thee, nay. Facetious smiles and meaningless conversation, I am quite cognizant of the airs you display. Will these unsubtle attempts to woo me disperse my fear? Verily I say unto thee, nay. This is a prearranged intrusion upon the zone in which I have comfort. Yet it is I who have chosen this discourse. Do I betray my own sensibilities? Verily I say unto thee, A. I feel my brow moisten as the seconds go by. I grow weary. I force myself to look at you. Look into the eyes of my source of pain. Your eyes do not return the gaze mine have initiated. Yours are elsewhere, singularly focused on ceasing this moment. Is our experience nearing its inevitable completion? Verily I say unto thee, A. It is then and only then that my trepidation dissipates. Relief and joy have overcome my beating heart. Dare I say that I will see you again in half a year's time? Verily I say unto thee, A. The dentist. So like I said at the top of the show, one of the featured pieces in today's podcast episode is definitely the stimulus bill that was passed, aka the American Rescue Plan. And I know a lot of people are going to be interested to see exactly how that helps families. It's one of those big bills, but I've got the deets on what's being spent and where it's going. You've got $1,400 checks coming out. There's about $424 billion spent on that. You've got $350 billion spent on state and local aid, prevent layoffs and service cuts. You've got $246 billion being spent on unemployment insurance. $219 billion being spent on tax credits, aid and childcare for families. roughly $178 billion on the reopening of schools and higher education. You've got $176 billion spent on vaccinations and healthcare, $109 billion on farmers, small businesses, and other vital industries, $47 billion on FEMA disaster relief, other something else, about $45 billion. We'll get to that a little later, unless I don't find information on that $45 billion. $40 billion of renters and home insurance, $25 billion for restaurants and bars, $17 billion for veterans for your $1.9 trillion relief bill. So again, man, I think it's a positive step in the right direction. I'm never against the government actually doing things like giving its citizens money when needed. We're still continuing to fight the pandemic. Yes, we may have turned the cases, you know, the trending downward. Yes, we've turned the corner as far as it being the robust amount of cases and deaths that we were seeing. But again, man, getting too antsy to presume things as normal is how you end up getting put back in the situations that we were just in. But now you have CDC recommending that people who've been vaccinated can get together with other vaccinated people and not need masks. Now, I'm sure if you're in that group of people that have already been vaccinated, that's great news, but that means you're either an overworked healthcare worker, a frontline person, or you're over the age of like 60, 65, okay? And I would still recommend those groups of people not be gathering, as again, we're still dealing with the novelty of it, the long-term side effects of it. I think there's still a lot to be learned from fighting this battle, and so I think that's an interesting recommendation, but we're still dealing with a very slow vaccine rollout. You know, we have, again, like I said on the last episode, now three different vaccines that you could choose from, so hopefully the general public, those below retirement age, can be vaccinated sooner rather than later. Hopefully the age groups and the definitive groups of who can be vaccinated are shared sooner rather than later. One good thing is that educators have been boosted up towards the, you know, the top of the list, if you will, as far as groups of people that can be educated. That may be happening more on local levels than you might see in your typical national news. But again, as an educator, I am happy and hope my other educated people can get in on the vaccines. If you've already gotten yours, tell me, how's it going? How you feeling? What do you think about that? So again, I think, you know, again, just having this relief bill get passed is very important. You know, again, those $1,400 checks per adult and kid should help out a lot of people. I saw something, I think the other day, that said Biden's betting on poor Americans as part of the campaign. And I think that is an interesting way to view it and sort of slice it as potential clickbait. But again, if you're thinking about people that have been marginalized, people that have been at the bottom end on the economic, you know, turnstile, if you will, it makes sense to be doing something for the people that need it the most in that sense. So in creating this money, because again, I always think of it as fake money, man. Yes, $1,400 now, we got $600 back in December, January, of course, and $1,200 during that other guy's administration. But it's not, I don't want to say it's not enough. I'll say it's enough for a lot of situations. Single individuals, you know, if you've gotten the first two checks, hey, and you've been managing to stay employed and stay low key, now you get another $1,400, should help. But if you're barely scraping, this $1,400 could be huge. Plus, you get another potential $1,400 per kid that you're claiming as a dependent. So, I mean, again, man, this is one of those rare times where it pays to have kids. So for everybody that does have them, congratulations on that. This also extends the unemployment benefits at $300 through the 6th of September. $3,000 per kid that are 6 to 17 as far as the age range, $3,600 cap for kids 0 to 6. So again, man, I think it's a great move in the right direction as one of the steps to continuing to turn the corner in the fight against COVID-19. This stimulus bill should definitely help people get on their feet in that sense. So again, man, if you've looked at the details of the bill, what are your thoughts on it? I'd love to hear from everybody. Like I said, I think it's a step in the right direction in continuing to fight this virus. I'm never against spending money because, again, okay, we can be conservative and not spend, and then you have poor people being poor without jobs and no assistance essentially coming from the government that they're supposed to rely on in times like this. So I couldn't imagine being against it. I couldn't imagine ever being against people getting their money as needed. And these are those times that call for it, man. Desperate times call for desperate measures, is the cliche saying. But when you're dealing with a pandemic that's ravaged your country, I would say being desperate until you can see the clear, you know, the clear turnaround, this is the right sort of action to take. So looking forward to it. Be looking at that direct deposit if you got it. Again, these aren't taxable stimulus checks. So if you haven't gotten it, be looking for that rebate when it comes to tax filing time. But otherwise, help is on the way. So in addition to being my birthday month and Pisces season, March is recognized as International Women's Month. It's a month of recognition and acknowledgement of the power of women, and rightfully so. It began as Women's History Week back in 1981, and it's just grown to be a time and a point in time, if you will, where women internationally are recognized for all the things that we rely on women for, man. And if you're born of this earth, then guess what, man? You owe that to a woman. So it's always a good time to support our ladies, uplift, empower our ladies however we can. And so I'm all here for it. Honoring different women throughout the month, I think of those that I've seen in various organizations, not just here, but abroad, not just Black people, not just white people, but women of all walks of life. You have anti-hate coordinators for Asian American Advancing Justice departments, like in Chicago, Miss Catherine running that. You have Angela Cobian and other Latinx elected leaders in Colorado supporting student organizers working to vaccinate 1,000 elderly people. Recently, this past month, you've got an accomplished leader and advocate for educational quality, Ms. Janelle J. Artis Wright. She's been named the new executive director of Parent Revolution, which is an organization dedicated to supporting students and families in California. You have Ms. April Johnston, who's a native educator from the Navajo Nation, and she's taught on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation for 5 years and is currently the head of the school as the principal, as they try to continue pursuing educational equality for all Indigenous people. So those are just, you know, various people doing in various walks of life, all stemming around education, of course, because that's what I'm big on, that I just wanted to take a second and highlight. I think during this time of International Women's Month, it's important to just, you know, if you're listening to the sound of my voice and you're a man, look, man, you got a mother, a sister, a wife, girlfriend, possibly, just in the sense of recognizing everything that they do, just taking that extra moment to sort of appreciate everything that they bring to your life and find a way that you may add some value and ease to their lives, man. I think it's always great to look at points throughout the year as reflection points and opportunities to be in service for and of others. So International Women's Month, I just want to send a special shout out to all the wonderful ladies that may be listening to this podcast. You are loved, you are valued, your value is not tied to being a wife or a mother. You as an individual are valued and treasured, so hang your head high, queen, adjust your crown as needed, and continue to run the world. In continuing to recognize International Women's Month, I wanted to highlight this news, especially the first Black female official in NFL history, Miss Maya Shaka, says she's honored to be selected as an NFL official, but this moment is bigger than a personal accomplishment. It is an accomplishment for all women, her community, and her culture. And I think that is fantastic, obviously, giving her flowers in due time for just being obviously good at her job and being rewarded in this promotion sense accordingly. But again, man, just highlighting a league that's been around, is just now really getting into the integration and respecting women in the sport with the last 5 to 10 years, or even in the last 5 or so episodes that I've talked about the podcast, we've had, you know, all minority referee crews. We've had women doing playoff games, regular season games as well. And apparently they weren't full time, but now we have the first official full time female ref, and that's happening in the NFL. So I think, again, I want to see more of that, because women can talk to sports and understand sports, understand the nuances that I'm sure come with the referee position, the intricacies of it, the details, and what needs to be paid attention to, in the same sense as anyone else who studies for and applies for a position. So I'm happy to see this sort of inclusion. I'm happy to see this for the culture, and obviously for her in particular. And I hope we can continue to build on this as a society. And I hope that the NFL continues to try to build on this, because again, thinking the zebras is what we call refs, obviously. The zebras have to look a certain way or only have to be men is a really asinine thought, man. Anybody. And this is not to say disrespectfully to the referee position, but I feel like anybody, man, woman, non-binary, whatever, could be a referee, bro. So, like I said, this is good history in the making, and I'm here for it. I want to see more of it. In entertainment news, I thought I'd start with my review of Coming to America, a film I talked about being hyped about that I previewed in previous podcast episodes because it was dropping around my birthday time, and now it's streaming and available on Amazon Prime, as is the original Coming to America, which I would always recommend before and after seeing this movie. Coming to America 2, what can I say about it? I will tell you that as a film, it's terrible. It is pretty terrible. But as a piece of work that highlights everything not related to film, I think it's magnificent. Let's start by being filmed in Rick Ross's mansion, boss-ass move by the biggest boss himself, Rick Ross, as well as Tyler Perry's studios. So another boss move, being able to film that at two other minority owned establishments and locations. I'm here for that. The casting is definitely high point. You got James Earl Jones. You got the whole crew from the original, Arsenio Hall, Eddie Murphy, go without saying. And I think it's one of those movies where, again, it wasn't made to be the typical sort of sequel sort of movie. First of all, we're talking about what, like 20 years apart? I forget when the first, whenever the first Coming to America dropped, man, but we're sitting here in 2021, and it's hard to imagine that as a true sequel when it's taken that long. So I think it's one of those movies where we appreciate it more for the cultural relevance, more so than the critiques that I'm sure it's going to be under from the critics' perspective. Because I'm sure they're going to give this a trash rating on like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever other critical websites there are that do movie reviews. But I think this was made, like I said, entirely for the culture. And it's a movie where, again, we're blossoming as Black people, were being featured in non-slave roles, or, you know, these terrible scary movies where we're killed in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the damn movie. And like I said, the casting, man, we're seeing Arsenio Hall, John Amos, Wesley Snipes, hearing James Earl Jones, he really changed it to me. If I had to highlight a moment, his scene, and I don't want to spoil it, but this is a review, so if you haven't seen it by now, that's on you. I talked about it and I was gonna watch it, and I've watched it, so here we are. James Earl Jones, the twist he put on the funeral service, man, I thought that was actually pretty groovy. Having your funeral while you're living, yes, you may be in your last days, but you get to be a part of the ceremony as you transition. I mean, the man had the dopest funeral I have ever seen in a movie, where you have Morgan Freeman as the MC. Like I said, hard to take serious from a technical standpoint, but as a creative bit, I loved it. You've got Tiana Taylor killing some of the choreography at this. You have Gladys Knight in the movie. You've got Salt and Pepper, all a part of your choreographed funeral procession. I loved it. You can hear my dog in the background. She's got her own opinions on the movie. But getting back to the casting, man, I loved it. I loved the casting. That was definitely a high point. You had En Vogue and Salt and Pepper back-to-back performances, right? I mean, unless you're not somebody that enjoys seeing our icons cash more checks in the 21st century, because they're still icons. And I think sometimes we relegate them to old people status much sooner than needs be, because again, man, these are people that changed, and their music is heard essentially at every sort of gathering you could imagine if it's dealing with Black people. So to see En Vogue and Salt-N-Pepa back on screen with back-to-back performances, I loved every minute of it. Then, like I said, man, followed up with Gladys Knight. Come on, bro. Everybody and anybody was cashing checks and getting their 15 minutes of more fame, and I was here for all of that. Like I said, man, having an all-Black cast, Black writers, filming it at Rick Ross and Tyler Perry Studios was just the sort of creme de la creme of how you empower us, continuing material made for us, by us, and circulating that dollar between all of ourselves. You had Peaches and her sister with their tidbit in the movie. And so, like I said, man, you had a lot of things to be happy about that weren't dealing with just tearing the movie itself apart. Even in the movie, you have them talking about how, you know, sequels, if the first one is so fantastic, why bother trying to do it? And yes, that's sort of the sentimentality that I came away from it with. Even going into it, it was like, I can't have the same sort of expectations. Because I think if you're thinking of Coming to America, it was a cult classic to a degree that obviously had national fame and attention, and it's been, you know, recognized as such. But to think that this movie was going to be anything like that just because they were coming back, but it's been 30 plus years, it's been so long, I don't think I'd have been going into it with the right mindset trying to compare it. So I definitely think this one was more family focused. If this was one where, you know, the theaters had been open and everything and you got kids, this is definitely something you could take them to see. And you probably have some laughs, you know, a nice little cheesy family movie. Just got some adult innuendos and language here and there. The African representation, I can't speak to it wholeheartedly and culturally, but I would say based on the commentary that I've seen online, it's sort of a mixed bag as to what was really true in African style and heritage versus what was just being portrayed for film. So you have that. I like seeing, like I said, Wesley Snipes. You even had Rick Ross doing some acting, which is like, okay, my man's, you know, if you're filming it at my house, I might want to jump into the movie my damn self. I get that. That's okay. Tiana Taylor, she really killed her role, but I mean, is that surprising? That's not very surprising. Tiana Taylor's great. You had Trevor Noah delivering the Zamunda news. So again, they had these nice little moments that caught you off guard, people popping up on screen that you wouldn't have expected. And that's always refreshing to see some of your favorites doing so. So I like the movie, like I said, for everything that didn't have to do with what was actually happening on the screen. What are your thoughts if you've already seen Coming to America? Definitely looking forward to getting into that discourse with y'all. And did you enjoy the movie just for being a movie or for something else? Let me know. Now, in terms of music entertainment, Coming to America was another movie that came with a soundtrack, of course, and the soundtrack has some standouts on it. You have Get Off by Tiana Taylor, Jermaine Fowler, and Brandon Rogers. I like that one. I liked when I heard Megan Thee Stallion on there. She's got a song with Bobby Sessions called I'm a King. That was a nice little standout, and it's about the timing more so in the movies that makes the soundtrack more relevant, which is, again, going back to that point I made on the last episode about not liking to listen to soundtracks all the way through prior to seeing the film, because again, hearing them in certain spots puts it in a certain context that can make it jam or flop harder when you're watching the actual movie. You had The Midnight Train from Zamunda by Gladys Knight, definitely one of the standouts. And then one of the songs that I thought was a sleeper because it only played during the credits was John Legend, Burna Boy, and Nile Rodgers' song, Coming to America. The soundtrack itself features, man, like over 20 people, so it's a vast compilation album in that sense. Definitely got some standouts like the ones I mentioned, as well as a couple of sleeper picks, Public Enemy, Ice-T, and PMD, Smash the Crowd, and the Go Big with YG and Big Sean, which you may have already heard, because I'm pretty sure that song's just been out for a minute in general. But I like the soundtrack. I thought it was nice to pair with the movie, because again, the movie itself, like I said in the segment earlier, was, you know, it was cool. but nothing that I would just be jumping to watch again. I don't know if I'll ever see Coming to America again like that. So the soundtrack itself was pretty dope. But as far as entertainment musically, that was stealing the show. The debut of Silk Sonic, just saying that sounds real smooth, don't it? Silk Sonic. You had Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak locking in, making a band. It's called Silk Sonic. They dropped their first song at this point a few days ago, and it's a nice little tune, man. I think when you put two people together that are just so musically talented and inclined, like Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars are, is it surprising that they make a smash hit? Not surprising in the least. So again, the Leave the Door Open is the first song off of their band Silk Sonic album. They haven't dropped the entire album. I don't know what the rollout for that's going to be, if they're going to keep dropping them, you know, little singles here or there until they decide to drop the album. But this is definitely something that once, you know, the world is back open and people can tour, that I'm sure this is going to be one of the best tours available going around the country, and hell, probably around the world, if I'm being honest. The two stars that are Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak could easily do a world tour. And if it plays like the smooth R&B with the rest of the tracks that drop, like Leave the Door Open is, I wouldn't be surprised to hear that everywhere for the imminent future, man. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up getting awards based off of this song, if not whatever other singles they decide to drop. So definitely looking forward to more of that smooth Silk Sonic R&B. Now, another streaming and entertainment news coming soon to HBO Max. We'll have Godzilla vs. Kong. I'm excited for that. I like seeing the two of them go at it, even if it is, you know, something that you've seen cyclically over the last decade or so. You've seen their individual movies. They've had a crossover here or there in the last 10 or 15 years. And of course, over time, they've had their own crossovers. But HBO Max, that's something I'll be obviously adding to my watch list and to the queue. And it's something I'd probably like to see in theaters if I was just going by myself. I doubt my old lady's too interested in it, but probably be watching it at the crib since it's coming on HBO Max. Having the sound bar and the sound system set up to go ahead and put you in the movie theater, give you that feel anyway, pop my own popcorn and just sit back and enjoy a couple of hours of, you know, monsters going at it. We'll also have another streaming news, Marvel's Falcon and Winter Soldier dropping on Disney Plus March 19th. So as you know, if you're a Marvel person and you watch how they typically roll out their movies, they ramp up and get closer and closer to the big summertime drop that they have. But I, you know, presume obviously with COVID making everything different, we've had WandaVision on Disney Plus. That's come to an end. That was dropping weekly on Fridays. That had a nice little finale episode. I talked about how that didn't really ramp up until season or episode 4 and 5, really, for me. That had a nice little ending to it. And so we'll have something else to look up to sooner rather than later with Marvel's Falcon and Winter Soldier dropping on the 19th. So go ahead and add that to your watch list or to your queue if you haven't already. And they're not going to stop there as far as Marvel and Disney Plus hooking up. Coming to Disney Plus on June 11th, you'll have Marvel's Loki series premiering. So then, you know, like I said, we're getting more of their content that'll be coming. I assume it may also end up in, you know, in conjunction with the movie that drops during the summer. I don't know if there's going to be the direct correlation between either WandaVision or the Loki series that drops in June, but depending on the big summer movie that Marvel decides to go with, I wouldn't be surprised if one or more of these shows have some sort of crossover impact that comes across the big screen there. So just be on the lookout, adding those shows and series to your watch list and queues, and that is streaming entertainment for your consideration. In other news, I wanted to make sure I talked about in the entertainment sector, we had a deal, like I mentioned at the top of the show, between Square and Tidal According to Jack on Twitter, who's the creator of Twitter, he says Square is acquiring a major ownership stake in Tidal through a new joint venture, with the original artist becoming the second largest group of shareholders, and Jay-Z is joining the Square board. Now, you may ask yourself, why would a musical streaming company and a financial services company join forces? Jack says it comes down to a simple idea, finding new ways for artists to support their work. New ideas are found at the intersections, and we believe there's a compelling one between music and the economy. Making the economy work for artists is similar to what Square has done for sellers. And so I think that's pretty cool news. And I'm sure if you're really into the entertainment sector or listen to other, you know, music specific podcasts, that you've heard a bit about this news already. I thought it was worth noting because I obviously, you know, believe in Twitter. I like Jack. I believe in similar things that he also believes in, like Bitcoin and Square. I may or may not have stock and shares in both of those ventures, but alas, hearing about the acquisition of Tidal seemed to be right along the lines of what you would expect from Jay-Z, just making business moves that put him on more boardrooms, sitting at those tables, helping to broaden the perspective and most likely the boardroom itself. I envision a lot of these boardrooms don't have people of Jay-Z's background or character on them that are working with artists. And so therefore you end up seeing a lot of the same mistakes potentially happening with artists not having the full creative control and the monetization aspects that they're expecting, despite being, you know, into a bunch of different avenues and trying to find as, you know, lucrative as ways to get their music out to people and to get support back from those people that love their music with the relative ease that you should have in the 21st century. So I think this is a good move, obviously, between Tidal and Square. I'm sure we don't have really, obviously, all the details on it. It'll be interesting to see what the integration is between some future projects as far as, you know, people that like to release on Tidal. Is there going to be, you know, a sooner release if you link your account to Square? Or will it be available via Square? Or is there going to be some sort of different monetization aspect between the two? Who knows? I'm looking forward to seeing what comes forward, because again, when you're in that creative space, trying to have as seamless of a process as to getting obviously your creative ventures out to your fans and then get in whatever, you know, revenues are accrued accordingly, I'm all for it. And if this makes it easier for creators in the music space to do that, then I'm definitely trying to support that as well. So what are your thoughts on it? Do you feel like Jay-Z may have engaged in bad business? I wouldn't know the details enough to fathom that. So if Hove is flipping Tidal for more than what he would have bought it with, obviously that's a good business move for him. And I think he still obviously has the best interest of creators at heart, because he brought on other creators within the hip hop space and within the R&B space on board as part of Tidal, which also gives them more access that they may not have otherwise have. So I'm here for it, man. I'm all for power to the people. In Florida news, we had the asshat governor that is DeSantis and other state officials come under deep scrutiny amid revelations that seniors in a wealthy enclave in Key Largo receive hundreds of life-saving vaccinations as early as mid-January, which gave ammunition to critics who say the Republican governor is favoring wealthy constituents over your ordinary Floridians. And considering that I am one of those aforementioned ordinary Floridians, I am pissed off about this sort of shit. DeSantis, pushed back this past week, saying a local hospital, not the state, was behind the vaccinations of more than 1,200 residents of the exclusive Ocean Reef Club in Key Largo, Florida, and that the state, quote, wasn't involved in it in any shape or form. Now, that's a very interesting story and a very interesting quote to me for a couple of reasons. The first is, okay, so you're passing the buck. As the governor of the state, you're passing the buck down to an individual county within the state. Okay. So then my second point that I end up coming to is that, okay, so what you're telling me, Ryan, what you're telling me is that individual counties can get access to COVID vaccinations without the state being involved in any shape or form. That's a very interesting premise, because then it would seem that you're not needed to get people vaccinated and that you're just a figurehead. People should take the roundabout way, since they can just get 1,200 plus vaccinations and the state not be involved in it in any capacity. Now, if that's the case, then if you're hearing this and live in Florida, tell your boy where the next illegal or legal, through DeSantis's explanation of things, where I can find the next little county that's just got their hands on 1,200 vaccinations that the state has nothing to do with. And I will be one of the first people in line there. Because that's an asinine comment to me. One, for your leader to pass the buck off to a specific county and then to say that the state has nothing to do with it when we're talking about COVID-19 vaccinations. Now, considering how crucial these are and that they're trying not to be wasted in any capacity, it would make sense that some sort of legislation or amendment or addendum, note, whatever you want to call it, made its way through the governor's office, and he would have had to see where these vaccines were going, how many of them were going there, and then make a decision accordingly to obviously allow that to happen or to say, nah, I don't want those directed there. Now, if you're telling me counties can just somehow get their hands on these vaccines, these vaccinations, and get to do what they want with them, then damn, talk about power of the people, which is something I'm all for. But he sounds like a complete ass in my estimation for saying something like that when it's your program that's trying to vaccinate as many people as possible that are 65 and older with your seniors first slogan. I just find it hard to believe, man, that somebody would be able to pull off that move in the midst of everything going on from a county level. The inequitable distribution of the COVID-19 vaccines is becoming, again, a public relations challenge, as there are 3.2 million people who've received one or two doses of it, but out of that population, less than 6% have been Black, when Black people make up about 17% of the total population. Now, we do fortunately have some people that are trying to hold this asshat accountable. The Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fry joined Democratic U.S. Rep. Charlie Crist calling for federal officials to probe the DeSantis administration's vaccine distribution programs. Because again, for him to try and pass the buck and say, oh no, the state had no idea that this was happening, somehow the county is just acting unilaterally in doing so, is just a crock of shit. If I'm keeping it 100, that's a big crock of shit, and I ain't in the mood for it, man. So I hope we continue to keep our foot, like I always say, on these public officials' necks, man. These elected people that are out here just making unilateral decisions and then passing the buck when things go awry. No, no, no. Hold them accountable. Keep the foot on their neck.
What's good, official Dom J Radio listeners? It's your boy, Agent Jerry, stopping by to let you know Dom love the podcast, man.
In sports news, the NBA All-Star break went off without a hitch. They changed up some of the formats, and I thought it was pretty dope. The three-point contest, you had Steph Curry winning that for the second time. The slam dunk competition took place during the halftime of the actual All-Star game. And I thought that was pretty nice to keep the momentum kind of built, keep people in their, you know, virtual seats, if you will, entertain. Even if the players weren't on the court, they were still sitting, you know, courtside, being able to watch this while they, you know, caught a little breather. So that was pretty dope. In the game itself, you know, you had Team LeBron beating Team Durant. Durant wasn't even playing in the game, but, you know, he's just a GM via proxy. LeBron with his fourth victory as the GM constructing the All-Star team. So kudos to that man, as he definitely has his aspirations to be a owner and GM in the future. He's off to a great start being able to assemble some of the best players for your team. So I thought that was a pretty cool breakdown. New switch up in the format. They changed up, like I said, with the three-point contest. They added, you know, some different sort of little money ball spots. So for it to come down to literally the last rack and the last ball on the rack for Steph Curry to beat Mike Conley, I thought that was pretty epic. A little drama, if you will, for the three-point contest there. The switch up as far as the dunk contest judges for the last actual round of the dunk contest, just putting in the name of who they thought to win. was interesting. I thought that was, you know, again, them making small little changes here and there was pretty cool. It went off without a hitch in the sense of, obviously, it being in Atlanta. The mayor was concerned with it, but it was a made-for-television event in the sense that the Turner Broadcasting is also housed in Atlanta. So again, when you're thinking about operating costs, this helped try to keep that relatively low. And again, you know, it was a bubble within a bubble in that sense, because they still weren't allowing big numbers of fans and things of that nature. So, you know, that went off without a hitch. In the NFL, getting back to it, the NBA is not even kicking back off until this Thursday. So that's happening. You know, again, it's been a nice little break for them. The second half schedule was released accordingly, and so they should be getting back to games this week. So if you're like me playing in some fantasy leagues, make sure you got your lineup set, man. Whoever you were going against before the All-Star break started, you're still going against them this week. So that does not end until Sunday night. So make sure your lineups are set. Okay. In the NFL, some of the big free agent news that's popped off since the last time we spoke is Dak Prescott getting his money from the Cowboys. Show me the money. 4-year, $160 million contract with the Cowboys. He gets $126 million guaranteed dollars, which is the second most in NFL history. He's getting a $66 million signing bonus, which is the largest in NFL history. And he's got a $22 million cap hit, but it would have been $37.7 million if he had been playing on the franchise tag. So, you know, I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I'm ecstatic just for this black man getting his money, because get your money. Black man, I'm all here for it. So I'm happy to see that man get paid. And he can essentially, in 4 years, when the new TV deal comes around for the NFL, be in a position to get paid yet again, because, again, it was a 4-year contract, which was something he and his agent wanted to work out, not the 5-year deal that the Cowboys were talking about. So, you know, the move created $15 million in immediate cap space for the Cowboys, and this man gets paid as well. Some of the money, again, in the future can be restructured from contract money to signing bonus money. So, again, I think it's a good move for the Cowboys to keep a franchise quarterback in-house, and I believe he is a franchise quarterback when you've seen how he's played since coming in as a fourth rounder and producing good seasons as far as his QBR statistics. You can say some of the numbers were garbage numbers in a sense, but the man has done his part in trying to win a good share of games for the Cowboys, even though, you know, obviously his last season was cut short due to injury. So I'm happy that that man's getting paid all of his ducats. I'm always here for that. And do I think this changes the outlook for the Cowboys insofar as winning that division? Possibly. You had Carson Wentz, who was also one of the promising QBs in that division, be traded to the Indianapolis Colts, reuniting with Frank Reich, one of his former QB coaches, which clears the way for Jalen Hurts as the coach of the Eagles, and the owner there wants that to be the case going forward. So potentially they build around that young man. The Washington football team, who knows what their quarterback situation is going to be. They let Dwayne Haskins go after he just kept making an ass out of himself while the team was losing games. So who knows what's happening there. The Giants seem to be sticking with Daniel Jones and building around him for the future. So that division, again, it's one of the most, you know, I'm being, you know, respectfully, one of the most mediocre divisions in football. But it could be, you know, Dax to essentially have, if he can, I don't know, elevate himself above what seems to be mediocre coaching and mediocre defense. So we'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Will I be picking them to, you know, make a deep playoff run and all that just because he got paid? I don't think of the correlation as that. That's going to be the public perception and what the media pushes forward as a nice little story note. But just because the quarterback gets paid doesn't mean he turns into, oh yeah, now he's going to win the Super Bowl and all that there. Because, I mean, Deshaun Watson's paid, but the Texans were god-awful. Was it directly his fault? No, he still had a great, you know, statistical-based season by all accounts. So, again, the quarterback is the most important position on the team. If you watch sports, you know that. But that doesn't mean everything, man. You still have to fill in the other pieces around him. The Cowboys do have some nice offensive weapons. You got Zeke, you got Amari Cooper, you got CeeDee Lamb, you got Michael Gallup. So they've got pieces there. But that offensive line is old, aging, injured. The defense is just suspect. If we're being honest, you've got a couple of flash pieces there in your linebacking core, but And, you know, maybe Owuzie on the back end, but who knows, man? It should be interesting to see how that division plays out. Would I pick them to win it? Like I said earlier, the path is pretty clear, I think. But again, with this division, it always seems like nobody actually wants to win it, and they all just want to hang around 500. So who knows? We'll have to see. Some other sports news that I wanted to make sure I spoke about. Overtime is launching Overtime Elite, which is a basketball league for 16 to 18 year olds. According to the headlines, players are getting $100,000 minimum salary, health benefits, equity stake in Overtime, and if an athlete decides not to pursue basketball professionally, Overtime will cover college tuition up to $100,000. Now, you've got various players that are part of this Overtime movement that have been part of organizing this new league. Carmelo Anthony is quoted as saying, "We need to do a better job of empowering the next generation of players and setting them up for success. Having this type of guidance for high school players is critical in setting them up for a successful career." I'm interested in it because, again, I'm for whatever avenues, you know, the next generation wants to take that circumvent the system that we have currently in place. And I say the system because, again, when you have 16 to 18 year olds, you think about some of the last, you know, highly touted incoming prospects for the NBA, like Zion. He was somebody that the league had been following since he was in like middle school, that just knew he was going to be fantastic. It was like the LeBron effect all over again. KD, you know, he was tall and lengthy, but was killing it, even if it was low key in his 1 year at, you know, Texas. Before that, you saw the makings of a potentially lethal NBA player. And if this new system, or this new league rather, with Overtime helps identify and cultivate more league talent sooner rather than later, I'm all for it because, again, it gives more students and young men and young ladies the opportunity to take control of their life and their finances ahead of the times where the NCAA will be trying to dig their claws in and get their percentages off of the work you do on the strength of their alleged school brand. When you think about it, nobody cares about a college basketball brand that much, man, unless we're talking like UCLA, North Carolina, Duke, or, you know, schools like that. There aren't really too many to where you feel the brand of the school for college basketball outweighs that potential individual student's brand. Zion, yes, went to Duke and, of course, got, you know, a lot of pub from going to Duke University. But he, in my estimation, would have been Zion anywhere. More details, though, on the league. It's going to be a 30-person basketball operations per team, access to experts in nutrition, fitness, and sports science, a 4-to-1 student-teacher ratio. And they're stated as saying, "We're in a position where it's about what we're doing, and what we're doing is something that's bigger than us," as quoted from the Overtime CEO. And I think it's something that should have been done a long time ago. And it was in one, you know, recent history. We had one instance of it 4 years ago with LeVar Ball announcing the Junior Basketball Association with players paid from $3,000 to $10,000 a month. That leak only lasted a year. But again, that was because that was one man trying to create something, trying to create an expansive endeavor for, you know, incoming high school and potential college students. So I think it's, again, something that we need to provide to students, because I'm all for, and I call them students because, you know, kids of that age, they are students first before they're athletes, but these student athletes all the same need options, need better pipelines for prep for the NBA. So if you can have more NBA people involved before they're having to get to college and then make those sorts of decisions, I think this is a plus. Because I think, you know, having those sorts of benefits available to you, if you're one of these premium athletes in the middle of high school, man, that can set you up to be whatever you want to be as far as controlling the narrative around your brand. You're able to build it how you want to build it and take into consideration, you know, what do I want to do for the next couple of years? Where do I want to go? Do I want to just take the school scholarship route, or do I want to seek out other leagues? Do I want to go play in Europe potentially or overseas somewhere? I like LaMelo Ball, who's having arguably the best rookie season out of any of the rookies for the Charlotte Hornets. And I think he's well on his way to winning Rookie of the Year. You could tell from the way he came in playing confidently, that time he spent playing overseas in Europe served him well as a teenager playing amongst grown men, and it's showing itself in his great numbers heading into All-Star break. The man's averaging like 16-6-6, I believe, in his freshman, you know, season of the NBA. So I'm here for it, man. Again, with students or the players making at least 100K, That is a great thing because, again, it gives them healthcare benefits. They have a tailored academic curriculum to them. That money in the pocket, again, to build your brand as you see fit. And we're not talking, obviously, just everybody. We're talking about the elite of the elite. And I think it's a great way to give them a comprehensive route that develops the athlete completely, not just their basketball skills, but the athlete completely insofar as their education, economic empowerment, and building, again, their own brand. So this is something I didn't hear too much news about, but I'm interested to see how this develops because, again, I think giving the next generation more avenues and options to create their own paths is something I'm always championing for. And so this is just another one of those ventures in the sports world that I think is something we should all be looking forward to. And I hope it succeeds and succeeds abundantly. And there you have it. Episode 27 of the official Dom J Radio Show. Episode 27, The Stimulation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for liking, sharing, and subscribing to the podcast, however you're listening to it. Thank you for your support as we continue to grow the show. And I am looking forward to the next episode. We'll have some more surprises in store. I got some interesting topics already lined up as I'm wrapping up this episode, so be looking out for that. As always, in the meantime, in between time, be sure to stay blessed. Get plenty of rest and mind your business, drink your water, and tend to your life the best as you can. We will continue to strive and make it out of these situations and overcome all obstacles by keeping the faith, y'all. As always, in the meantime, in between time, peace.